This call is being recorded.
Okay, I'm on Tinder. I just add people.
Well, I've been sitting here all day. I've been sitting in this waiting room. And I've been waiting on my friends. Yes, I'm waiting on this conference call. All alone, and I'm on hold. Yes, I'm on hold. I hope it's not all day. Well, I wonder where they are. Yes, I wonder.
Hi, Carl. Can you hear me?
And can you hear us okay?
Seems to be getting better, yes.
Right, great. Fantastic, thanks.
Is it also showing up that I'm connected twice from your side?
Just once.
Okay, great.
And if we can just ask you to mute yourself, that'd be great.
Hello.
Hi, Kristen.
Yes.
Bronwyn from JB Health Systems.
Oh, hi.
Hello.
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 Hi, Pete.
Hello.
Hi, Crispin and Pete, can you guys hear us okay? Sound check, can you just confirm you can hear us?
Hello?
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Carl, can hear you. The sound from your side, though, is much quieter than the other participants.
Right, is that any better?
No, that's the same.
Okay,
hi, this is Christine.
Hey, Christine, it's Carl. How are you doing?
Hi, Carl. Good, good. I couldn't get the audio to come through my computer. I was sitting there trying and trying, but I couldn't get it, even though I have Chrome and Firefox, so I decided just to call in.
great. It looks like we're having some fun with the new conferencing tool. But we'll get used to it shortly, hopefully.
Yeah.
We also have Daniel online, and we've got Kristen, and I do believe Pete. Is that correct, Pete? Right. It looks like we're just waiting on John and a few others to join. So if you don't mind, we'll give it a few minutes.
Okay, sure.
Okay. Everyone, just to confirm online, Christian, I want to say something to make sure. Daniel? Dan, do you mind just checking if you can hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
Can you hear Pete?
Yes, I could hear Pete.
Thanks, everyone. I know we're struggling.
struggling a little bit with our conferencing solution at the moment, but new things do take a bit of time and we will get it all pulled together. I do see that Emily's joined us online. Emily, thanks for joining us. We've got you just on mute at the moment. There's a bit of background noise, but happy to have you with us as well. And we'll give it a few minutes. Hopefully, John will join us shortly, and then we can get started. If we can ask for about 3 more minutes, and then we'll get started. Thank you.
So, Carl, I'm failing to get onto this Uber conference facility at all. It keeps asking me to download more software and all kinds of stuff, which I'm very reluctant to do.
It's generally plugins for Chrome that lets it run through the web browser that comes along or an update. But we have had some good use of it with the larger open MRS community uses it as a default go-to for its grouping. But I think we can work through the best solutions as we go and see if there is maybe another option that works better for us in the longer run as well. But and we also, maybe Pete, you and I can test it a little next week. If
yeah, that'll be fine.
Anything else we can do?
Skype seems to be working for us now.
Yes.
Yeah, well, while there are a few of us on it, Skype works well. As soon as you start to get to the end and little more and we start dialing out to multiple numbers, Skype starts to stretch. Right, then we'll probably, in light of time, and since this call is recorded, we will make the recordings available a little later. Firstly, welcome everybody to this week's, the second of our BSIS calls, and great to have the team on board today. Just doing a quick roll call from our side here in Cape Town. We have Ronwin and Tariro and Linda and myself, Carl. We have Daniel joining us from Johannesburg. Then via Skype, we've got Christian and Pete. We have Emily on board and Christine.
Yep,
did
that's
I miss
correct.
Anybody? Fantastic. Well, welcome everybody back to the BSIS call itself. As I said, it is the second of our hopefully many more to come, and really excited as we start to grow a little bit of the community. Like last time we spoke, we introduced the idea that Jambi has been awarded the award from CDC to continue the thesis work, and we're excited to start the community process again and keeping our teams engaged and involved as we move forward. We were excited to hear that ABB has some level of commitment with Lesotho going ahead, and Jambi has recommitted or confirmed his commitment to Lesotho as the beta implementation site. And we'll continue working through it with our program plan. There are some conversations that will happen next week to tidy up what that looks like. And Daniel did give it, Daniel and Linda, the state of the nation, so to say, as to where we are with the tooling itself and some of the updates from the beta test, as well as running through some of the version 1.0 roadmaps, which we're going to start bringing more to the foreground on the call in this community process as we go ahead. In summary from last week, with our award from CDC, the big focus has been refocused from the original advertising of it to really focus on getting the BSIS tool to a version 1.0 that is safe for deployment in countries and with sites. And with that, a lot of our resourcing and efforts have been directed towards that. We're excited to see that growing. That has meant that, rightfully so, we're not going to be implementing this month a full version of the tool, and I know we're all glad to see that, but we are excited to be engaging with everybody more as we move through this process, more into the validation and tighten up some of the features that are part of the tool that's still being worked on. agenda for today's call is this brief introduction that I've given and a summary update. Hopefully we'll keep that moving week to week to set the context of where we're going. And what we're going to be doing a little bit is handing over to Linda in a few minutes, who will be introducing us to a re-energized, let me coin that, version of our online presence and communities. And then over to both Linda and Daniel to run through some of the questions and feedback that we'd love to get from the community as to some of the questions we have around the tool and the process at the moment. And we're at all times, there is an opportunity if anybody would like to add any other items to the agenda for today's call. I'm going to pause there before I hand over to Linda to find out if there are any other last-minute items that we'd like to add to today's agenda.
Well, I might just like to give a brief report on the meeting of the recovery plans for Ebola-affected countries that I attended in Brazzaville 2 weeks ago.
That would be fantastic. It would be great if we could schedule that. I think we could probably jump into that shortly. I do believe that Malekwa is trying to join the call. Ronwyn, have you got Malekwa on Skype? Maybe we can Skype her in. So Pete, if we could ask just for a pause there, and then we'll hand over to you to give an update, unless there are any other agenda items that Christine yourself or would like to add to it, or Emily from yourself.
At this time, I don't have anything to add. I feel like I need to learn a little bit more of where we're at right now. So I'm just going to participate that way today.
Fantastic. Emily, maybe I'll ask you if you've got 2 minutes just to introduce yourself to the community a little more. I know we met a little while ago, but maybe you can just spend 2 minutes of your, as to who you are and your interest here.
Carl?
Yeah. Hello. Okay, there we go. Just had to unmute myself. Hi, everyone. My name is Emily Avera. I'm a PhD student in anthropology at Brown University. And I met a little while back with Carl and Linda. So it's very nice to reconnect. And I'm just very interested in, I've done research previously on bone marrow transplantation, primarily with respect to donor recruitment. So I'm just very interested in how you kind of my focus toward blood donation, perhaps. And I'm really interested in how this project is getting off the ground. And I'd just like to sort of follow developments and see if there's any potential for me to sort of collaborate or do a research project that's related to some of the work that you guys are doing. So thank you very much for allowing me to listen in on these calls and hear how things are developing.
Now, Ronwyn, great. Ronwyn's not talking at the moment. She's got a bit of a bad voice and recovering from flu, so we've asked her kindly not to infect us.
Okay.
Great. Malekwa, welcome to the call. We've got you looped in via computer-to-computer communications with the team on Uber conference. And just to confirm, we have myself, Carl, Linda, Ronwyn, Tariro, Daniel, Christine, Emily, Pete, Christian, and we've seen we've just got a new participant joining from the conference.
Carolyn.
Hey, Carolyn.
Hey.
Great. Well, with that said, Pete, I'm going to hand over to you to give a bit of an update from your meeting that you had in Brazzaville last week.
Okay, Carl, thanks very much. I'll be very brief. The purpose is to have a look at the blood safety aspects of the health system recovery plans for what are called now Ebola.
Sorry,
those are the three countries, Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia, who bore the brunt of the epidemic. Also, all of their neighboring countries and some of those who had transients who also contracted the disease. So that included Nigeria, Mali, Senegal, Burkina Faso, Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana, and several other countries who we've already been engaged with through our normal technical assistance work. I was there together with John Pittman's colleague from CDC Atlanta. And of course, during the conversation, the need for IT tools and blood services came up. And I used it as an opportunity to alert that community to this development, and there is, as you would expect, a lot of interest. So we certainly have a lot of potential countries where we could install this tool in a relatively short space of time, that being the next 12 to 15 months. So it's very, very much on their agenda, and we just need to make sure we're in a position to deliver.
Thanks so much for that update. I think that's great news to hear about. And we're looking forward to seeing how we can take those conversations ahead in a responsive and respectful way to the groups, as well as the technical assistance partners supporting them as BSIS comes into its strength to move ahead.
Yeah. I think the important point, Carl, is that there are resources that are being made available for health systems strengthening, not blood safety per se. And a reasonable part of that agenda will obviously be information and communication technologies to assist with the health system strengthening in general. And we just need to be alert to that and how we access it for maintaining and installing BSIS.
Sounds great. We're really looking forward to that. And I think as our plans come around, we can definitely look at how we bring that in. Talk about how we engage with those countries. So people are looking forward to touching base with you on that, probably more personally, and then figure out how we take it from there.
I think that's a good approach. I just wanted to give people a heads up, that's all, just so that people are alert to other possibilities.
Great. Well, fantastic. If there are any questions for Pete around that at the moment, I'm going to pause for a minute on this side, and then I'm going to hand over to Ronwin. To Linda. Right, great. With that said, Linda, over to you.
Okay, hi everyone. You should have got an email earlier on today from Tereiro that actually had the link to our new BSSP wiki. This is a public and freely available wiki, so you shouldn't need a password or anything to log on to it. But do just let me know if you have any problems accessing that link. But following the same sort of pattern we've used with our other open source communities, this wiki is going to, at the moment it's just a page, but our intent is to actually build it out and really make this a useful resource for the whole community. So the things that are really of most importance at the moment, we've got two things. You'll see the upcoming schedule for all the community calls right up till end of December. And following each call, Tereiro will be adding the minutes and the call recording link to the wiki, so that you can always access any information from the wiki itself. And the other thing that's going to be of interest to most of you will be the development roadmap. This is the same roadmap that we discussed on the previous call, really just outlining what we see as the main releases that will be available quarterly and what will be in each of those releases. So we will be keeping that updated, and as each release becomes available, we will be adding release notes to that. And those will include a lot more detail around the functionality that's contained within each release. But that's really just to give you a feel for what the wiki is going to be used for. If you do have any questions or comments, please feel free to email me. Are there any questions around that? Great. Okay, well, if that's okay, I'm going to launch into the next section, which is really leading on to the software development. As you know, we've at the moment working on what we're calling a hardening release. So we're adding some new features and some making some tweaks to the beta test version that is currently installed within Lesotho. And related to that, we have a few questions, and we'd really like to get the opinion of various people on the call. So I'm actually going to hand over to Daniel just to lead us through a couple of the questions, and then we'd really like some of your feedback. Daniel, over to you.
Great. Thanks so much, Linda. So there's just a few kind of questions. We've been going through stuff to kind of figure out what needs to change, what doesn't need to change. And then there's kind of four main things that I want to ask. So I think we can run through them one at a time.
We've lost you there.
Asking for comments, but essentially the first is one of the things that we did is add in these two fields for the donor that records their date of first donation, and then also does an automatic count of the number of donations that they've given in the system. But kind of going back through conversations and stuff, there was some comments around the date of first donation field and whether that should be configurable when creating a new donor, or whether the date of first donation would always be automatically set when that donor donates. I think the comments were kind of related to, you know, where donors may have actually donated previously, but not in the current system. And that would kind of allow them to specify a date for that. But I think the risk in kind of making that a field that is editable. Just have that automatically set, not configurable, but to have it configurable when.
Well, I wonder if you could clarify that for us. Some of us are losing Daniel every second word.
Sure. Dan, we are losing him. I'm going to ask Linda to paraphrase on this side. Linda, over to you.
Okay, so just to sum up what Daniel was asking, at the time when adding a new donor, there is a field on that form that says date of first donation. And initially, this was going to be something that the system would automatically update at the time that the donation was actually entered into the system. But the query is, should this be an editable field? So should somebody be able to go in and actually manually enter that date? Probably really where you have a case where you have a donor who's donated before, but it's just that their details are not actually within BSIS.
This is Christine, and I believe that it should be editable, because unless BSIS uploads all the previous information.
I'm going to talk over you for a bit because we've got both of you going at the same time.
I can't hear anyone else. I'm sorry.
Me neither.
So I'm going to just marshal this, and Pete, if you don't mind, I'm going to be a gentleman and let Christine chime in first, and then I'll hand over to you, if that's okay.
Very happy with that.
Great. Christine, over to you.
Well, as I was saying, I believe the field should be editable, unless you're going to be able to upload all the previous donor information from, if there was a system, if it's paper, it's not going to be able to upload, because it's very important from an other perspective of that the donor, that you have that information about previous donations, because many donors, that's something very near and dear to them, that they have been historically a donor with this with your organization, and if you don't have it editable, you can't get that information in there.
Great, thanks, Christine. Now, before we take any comments from that, I'm going to hand over to Pete. Pete, I'm not sure if you caught all of what Christine mentioned there. If you want to add or alter that opinion. Yeah.
No, Carl, I got the gist of it. I just wanted to add and say that I don't have a problem with it, provided there's a mechanism within the blood service to ensure the integrity of that process. You don't want people pitching up claiming that they have been blood donors and they have no way of verifying that that is in fact the case.
Okay, a key for a standard operating procedure within the blood service itself. Which would be a catch for that one there, but I do think that would probably be in our checklist that we go ahead with. Great. John, is that you who's just joined the call as well?
Yes, it is. Hi, everyone. Sorry, I'm a bit late.
No problem. We've got Pete and Malekra and Christian online here via Skype, and then the team online, as you can see, Carolyn and Christine as well via Uber Conference.
Okay, great.
Daniel, Linda, with regard to the question that was raised there, you know, any thoughts or comments that we want to, any clarifications around the opinion?
Not from my side, that seems very clear. Daniel?
Not from my side, yeah. I think that summarizes the opinions. Thanks.
Can we move on to the next one then, Daniel, around the address field?
Great, sure. And yeah, if I break up, then if you wouldn't mind just paraphrasing afterwards again, Linda. But the essentially for the address fields when capturing the donor demographics, the issue that we're facing is that currently we kind of have a set list of fields. But we know that, you know, certain countries, different areas would collect, would use different fields there. So it's really a question of whether it's worth spending time to make those fields configurable. Otherwise, just agreeing on a list of address fields to use for version 1.0. We've currently got those as, you know, two kind of basic address fields, city, district, province, country, and postal code. But I think that city and district may be interchangeable, so it's really just agreeing on the priority of having those fields configurable, and then otherwise agreeing on a standard list to use that would kind of, you know, cover 80% of the use in the first iteration of the system.
Thanks, Daniel. I'm going to hand over to the team on the call and see if there are any thoughts or comments around the configuration of address fields itself. Would anybody like to raise a hand to make a comment or a thought around that?
Well, previously we spoke about ensuring that the formatting of those codes was false. For the reasons of having situations where uppercase and lowercase are used by people to distinguish individuals. They may have the same name or the same address or whatever the case might be. So in the early days, we spoke quite a lot about the actual formatting of those and forcing the formatting most. Is that still on the table or have we abandoned that?
Yeah, no, the formatting of the fields is still forced in that sense, but what the question is really around the layout of the actual address fields. So at the moment, we have about 7 or 8 fields, and we know that from country to country, these will probably vary. You know, not everyone uses district, not everyone uses province. So it's really a question of, should we go for a generic set of addresses and then it has to be handled through training, or should we be able to make those configurable so that for each country setting, we can actually have a standardized address format?
Ideal would be configurable so countries can standardize, but that may not be worth the delay at the moment.
Right, great, Pete. Thanks for that. Christine, any thoughts from your side as around this itself?
I agree that it should be configurable. That's the optimum. But I think you could, it just depends. I don't know how much time extra that would take if it's right now, if it's hard-coded fields. But I do think configurable gets it, it makes it very easy to then to be adapted to the country's, their system. And you'll get, the users will appreciate it a great deal, because they're going to be typing that in for every new donor all the time. And if for it should flow with how they're used to putting addresses and how they're used to reading addresses also. It makes it for much better compliance with the blood center.
I know we've got a few others on the call itself. Malekwa, any thoughts from yourself around the customization of address fields? One thought that I've just had here as we're looking at this, you know, addresses are great for entering and capturing patient demographics on one side, But I think there's the reverse aspect of the coin when you're doing report generation and any GIS or location-based services for donor recruitment and management in the latter parts of it, that you may need to be looking at the types of address fields and possibly making using an ISO standard as to predefine some of the available ones and allow them to be configurable at a later stage to be better exported to something like the DHIS or a GIS-based aggregation data tool for reporting. But I think as long as what we have here, and we should probably circulate the fields that we have and validate that what we have is as encompassing as we're probably going to see, at least in Lesotho for a start. And Pete, from yourself and Christine, from any of the other countries that you heard of, maybe looking at it as to how they structure address breakdowns for a person, that would be great for us. And then we could possibly try to save a little time and not spend a lot of time building this feature out, but rather do it in one of the latter sprints. So we're agreeing on that. I'm going to ask for an action item that, Linda, if you wouldn't mind circulating the list and the hierarchy at the moment to get validation that we've got a good match for the address field at the moment, and it will work for Fit for Country. Great. Any other thoughts or comments around the address field before we move on to the next question? Silence is king. Daniel, I'm going to ask Linda to run us through the next question and revert to you for clarification, just because your connection's a little fluffy. So Linda, over to you.
Okay, so the next one is at the point when you're adding a donation, obviously the DIN number is displayed on the screen, but it did come up during the beta testing that there should really be some additional information about the donor displayed on the same screen, just to ensure that you are actually linking the correct donor to the correct donation. So what we're asking is what sort of information should be displayed there? So this is within the donor clinic. So should it be name, gender, panel, date of birth, some sort of identifier? Really, I suppose, what is the minimum amount of donor information that should be displayed just to make sure that we are actually linking the correct donor to the correct donation? Daniel, anything you want to add?
Hi, everyone. Sorry, it's John. I've got to take another call. I'll try to check in later if I can.
Do we have a suggested set of points that we're looking to bring into that for that question there? So I think our suggestion is probably is name, gender, panel, age or date of birth and identifier sufficient? Or do we feel that there's more information that we would need to do the identification or less?
This is Christine. I have a question. I'm not sure if I know exactly at what point this screen appears. Is this when you're trying to register a donor and you get information from them and you want a certain screen to appear and you type in information, or you typed in the donor's name and you get multiple options? I'm not sure I know exactly what point in BSIS that this screen's appearing and what the functionality is.
So it's at the point of actually adding the donation where the DIN is being linked to the donor number. So it would be a case of all you would really do is scan the donor number barcode. But really what it does is it's just additional info to kind of validate that the barcode that you scanned is the donor who's standing in front of you. So it's just kind of a way to reduce the risk, I guess, of donor identification. So it should be covered, but it was just a suggestion that it would be much, much safer to include some basic information on that donor when you actually scan that in. So it's at the point of adding the donation into the system.
Okay. So this now, and I know when we were in Lesotho, they were not going to do real time. They were going to go out and do their clinic and come back, and somebody was going to be entering information. But this is, you're asking if someone's there and they have the system in front of them open, a laptop or whatever, and they're trying to register the donor to begin a donation? Is that?
Christina, I believe it's when there has been a donation of blood in, as a unit, and when that donation is now trying to be tied back to the actual donor itself. So it's a retrospective process that when you're scanning it, you're actually looking at the form that may have been captured, and you're seeing that the system has actually got the right name coming up. Daniel, Linda, is that correct? Yes.
Okay.
Does that clarify, Christine?
Yes, yes. And I believe that's all good information. I can't think of something else that should be there. I know that... that event, there's other checks probably down the way that will come up, just in case there happens to be two donors, similar names, same name many times, and the age of the birth date, you know, the identifiers could be close, and then you would have to go in and try to do some assessment if it's a duplicate donor, if you did create a new donor. But I think though the demographics that should be sufficient to be able to link that donation to the donor, if a donor history, because it would be not a new donor, correct? This would be somebody that's donated previously?
Yes, someone that's donated previously.
Okay.
Malekwe, you had a comment that you wanted to raise on this. I just want to check if you still want to weigh in around the idea of having this information available.
Name, gender, and the date of death should be enough for identifying the donor.
Great. Now to throw a spanner in the works here, a little a piece I haven't referenced you yet, but I'll ask you for opinion in a second. Is there any issue around privacy or access to data that this would violate, like different roles in the clinic fulfilling these areas? For example, a lab technician should not know the name of the person who has a positive TTI. Is that an issue that we should be considering in this particular phase right now, or does this not play to it? So with that, I'm going to ask Pete for your opinion on this idea, and if anybody's got any opinions on this concept.
I think a basic principle is in fact what the status quo should be. I just appeal not to cut quarters at the time we start developing footage afterwards. Integrity and security of the data really needs to be in the forefront of our thinking.
I think that, I'm glad you're here. We're all agreeing on that area. Linda, I'm going to ask Linda, Dan, you can chime in as well. This process that we're talking about in the workflow of the user itself, you've actually got the information of the donor in front of you on a paper form. So you've got the user will always have access to that anyway. This is a verification step for the safety of the system. So we're not looking to cross operational boundaries. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. It's an extra step of verification.
Okay, great. So then what I'm hearing here is that it seems like a positive step towards it and something that would contribute to safe data within the system. Let's move ahead with it, make a decision on those points as a minimum, and as the versions evolve, we may see them being changed. All right, Linda, back to you.
Okay, thanks. So this is our last question, and this is really around those donation batches. So you know the current functionality is that you have to open a donation batch, and then any donation that you collect during the session is actually allocated to that donation batch. And the system actually won't allow you to capture a donation without having a batch open. However, the question actually is, can you still add donors? Can you still register donors even when there isn't a donation session open? And seems to us that you probably should do, but we just wanted to get everyone's feedback on that. Is there anything else you wanted to add to that, Daniel?
No, that's fine with me, unless anyone needs more clarity.
So yeah, this is the question really is, can you still add donors if you don't have the donation batch session open?
Right. Maybe I'm not understanding. The donation batch would be a clinic? Like if you were at the clinic, that would all be a batch? Is that what you're saying? I'm not sure I understand the definition of a donation batch.
Yeah, it kind of grips a session. Sorry.
Carry on, Daniel.
So it would essentially be a session. So whether it's, you know, going out to a mobile clinic, all the donations in that mobile clinic would be entered in as a donation batch so that it groups them all together. Or if it was at the actual central central service, it would, a donation batch would probably be, you know, a day's worth of donations.
Yeah. From a perspective of the batch, you need that batch. Each mobile should be its own batch. The clinic should have its own batch. This helps later on if you would ever potentially think you have an error in test tubes getting mislabeled, that you know how to quarantine, because you have to quarantine by the batch, and you want the collections to be associated with the batch, definitely for problem solving. And also if you've closed the donation batch and you have another donor coming in, I think you have to create, even if it's a one donation because they came late and they're there to donate, it's probably best to require a new donation batch for that instance.
Right.
Yes, I thought somebody else was trying to talk, so I...
No, it's just a bit of an echo we have on this side.
Okay.
Between the laptops, so continue.
But I just think that having you shouldn't be able to add if a batch is closed, I guess you shouldn't be able to add one, but you might have a smaller donation batch, even if it's only one, it's still segments, and it's that donation batch by itself, because you're going to do potentially batch release. That's kind of the pharmaceutical model that is used with a term of batching, and it makes it cleaner, and it adds another level of safety also, just because if you ever needed to quarantine, you can quarantine by batch.
Great. Pete, any thoughts from your side on this one?
No, Cora. Unfortunately, she's very, very broken up, so I really haven't been able to follow Christine's argument.
Okay, I'll paraphrase from our side. And just to say, Linda and Daniel, as we're introducing these questions, put them in a story case for us that makes, puts it in the clinic context. I think one-liners are a bit difficult to understand the context of it. But from my understanding, the question is, if a new donor arrives at a donation point, after the person who's managing the donation point has closed the batch of donations, what do we do with that donor? And Christine's argument is that we should open a new batch to allow that donation to be put into that batch, even if it's a batch of one. And that would answer our question of do we block registrations of donors when there are no batches open? And it sounds what we're hearing here is yes, to do a donation, if there are no open if there is no open batches, a new batch needs to be opened.
That's correct.
Okay. Linda, Daniel, does that capture the challenge that you were facing in the questions correctly? Daniel? He's on mute. So, Linda, do you think that summarized the thought?
Yes, that does make it quite clear to me. I suppose I'm just trying to think of, would there ever be any exceptions to that? So would there ever be cases where you might want to register a number of donors before you actually start taking donations? So you're just registering new donors, but not actually taking any donations from them. But would that ever happen?
That situation shouldn't occur. A donor is not a donor until they've completed a health check and had blood drawn.
Okay, great. That's nice and clear.
Great. Okay. Malekwe, is that also how that operates in Lesotho as your standard operating procedure? Malekwe, I'm not sure if you're on mute. We're unable to hear you at the moment. We'll follow up offline around that one as need be, but I think we managed to get three good answers to the key questions we were here. We do have a little time left. I unfortunately need to step off due to a medical appointment that I've got, but I'm going to leave you in the capable hands of Linda, Ronwin, Tarira, and Daniel to continue moving this forward through possibly the next set of questions. But before I go, are there any other thoughts or questions that we'd like to raise? Or any other business that's arisen during the course of the call? Great. Right, Linda, I'm going to hand back to you to continue. Thank you.
Okay, great, thanks. If you do have time for one more question, there is actually one more that we would like to get a little bit of feedback on. And that's really around how to enter hemoglobin levels from the health check. Daniel, would you mind explaining this? Because you have a better understanding of how this came about.
Yes, sure. So currently, we enter those values in as numeric values, but with some of the feedback and conversations, there was a suggestion that some countries may just use levels as, you know, kind of whether hemoglobin level is acceptable or not acceptable, as opposed to specific numeric values. So it's really just a kind of discussion on whether that is whether it should be kind of optional to be able to set that as a kind of coded value, or if numeric is acceptable at this point. So I guess it just comes down to countries' requirements.
This is Christine. You can either have a quantitative number, which would be an absolute value, or you can have it qualitative, which means pass or fail. And not everyone is using a quantitative method because they might screen first with a qualitative method because it's a lot more cost effective. And if the one, and then they can do a quantitative on those that are close that maybe did not pass, or visually it wasn't as, you can use like the color scales or copper sulfate. So you have to have the ability to have both a qualitative or a quantitative answer because that's the methods that are being used.
Great. Thanks for the feedback. I think, yeah, that summarizes it perfectly.
Are there any other bits of feedback anyone wants to add to that? Okay, well, that's probably really the end of the list of our questions for today. But thank you very much. That was very helpful and much quicker than trying to do that over email. We will follow up just to summarize the points that we've discussed here. But thanks very much for all of that. And if there are no more issues that anyone wants to raise at this point, then we'll probably close off this call and we'll talk to you again in 2 weeks' time.
That's great. Nothing from our side.
Thank you, Linda. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, all.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Cheers.
When you're trying to not talk, that's when you